7 years old.
Really? What'd they have you doing first?
Well, feeding hens, sowing down hay, and sweeping barns.
Oh.
I was going to school then too. But I had the same chores to do every day after school, and on Saturday I would help drive the team, draw some wood from the cow pasture down below up to the house. We sawed up for firewood for 3 stoves.
How far was it from the house to the woodlot?
Oh, it was probably pretty near a mile. Then there was another woodlot up in Belmont where we went to draw logs. I went with the... Well, my father died in there somewhere.
He died when you were 16.
14.
When you were 16. You were born in 1898. He died... No, 14. 14's right.
14.
Yeah, 14.
He died, the 17th of August,
yeah.
1912.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were living at that time in Belmont, at the old, what's now the Rogers place?
No, in Town Malone. No, we never lived in Belmont.
Oh, you never? But it's up there in the country.
Yeah, 3.5 miles.
Yeah.
Southeast of Malone.
So you went to a second woodlot in Belmont to get wood.
Yeah, way up to Baldwin's woodlot, up French Crump's Hill, to get loads of logs with the hired man.
Uh-huh.
I never went with my father.
Uh-huh. How many hired men did you have at one time?
Well, one, but in potato digging we'd have 5 or 6.
Where would they come from?
All around the neighbors, downtown.
How much would you pay a hired man before your father died, if you remember, while you were still up there in the Rogers?
Well, they got $25 a month in their board. They used to board them, and then they'd stay there and sleep.
Uh-huh.
That's near as I can get to.
Who was the hired man that you had all the time?
James Doggett.
Can you remember anything about him? Anything sticks in your mind?
Yeah, he was a good farmer, and he was a good horseman, and he was a good worker.
Did he drink?
Yeah.
What would he do when he got drunk?
Well, he would stay away for 2 or 3 days. My brother and myself would do the chores.
That's Uncle Ralph.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would Nano say to him when he got back?
Well, she didn't say anything for a long time, till he kept doing that. And then one morning at the breakfast table, she asked him if he wanted to work here. He was cross and looked up and said, "Yes, I do." Well, then she said, "Be here."
He was an old batch?
No.
Yeah. What kind of a room did he live in? Was it in the house or in the barn?
Oh, upstairs, a nice, pleasant bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Did he keep all his clothes there?
No, he had them hanging in the clothes press.
Did it smell of old underwear and old feet in the room?
No, not him. Not that man. He was different.
Did he have a crucifix in the room, a cross, you know?
Can't remember. Well, he was a Catholic. He wasn't much of anything as far as religion was concerned.
Uh-huh. Did he talk with a brogue?
A little bit. Chewed tobacco all the time. And he, Well, him and I used to go down to the field afterward, and we used to draw hay together from one barn to the other, and if the weather was bad and we were in school, he used to come with a team to get us. And my mother said to him that he'd have to work every other Sunday, and the boys would do the chores when he wasn't there.
Where did he go on Sundays he was off?
Well, think he had some girl in a French settlement up there in Belmont, a French settlement on Atwood Avenue. I think, as I remember, he used to go that way. He walked.
Was he a man with white hair when you knew him, or was he a young man?
No, he had hair just the color of yours.
Oh, he was a young man? What did he do at night after supper? Did he go to his own room, or did he stay down with you?
He stayed down with us. Mm-hmm. He was practically one of the family, almost. He'd go up the barn and curry the horses. That would be clean the horses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What time did you all go to bed?
Why, different times. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And if my mother happened to go out for the evening, she'd take us kids with her, maybe over to Manili's or over to Manson's. He'd be in bed when we got back. We'd walk over there.
Mm-hmm. What would you do? How often would you go over there during the week?
Oh, we wouldn't go over there only a couple times a month.
Mm-hmm. What would they do over there all together?
Oh, have a lunch. And
they play cards?
My mother would. Her and some of the neighbor women that happened to be in there. I don't know what cards they played. I didn't really pay any attention.
You were the oldest of all the children.
Yeah.
The Manili's and the McGowan's and the Hapgoods all.
Well, we had 40 cows and 4 horses, 60 hens and 20 sheep, and 8 pigs. That was the farm. 150 acres. Pasture land and woodland and tillable land.
How much pasture land?
Well, across the road back towards Jim Manili's was 25 acres, I guess, one pasture. The other one wasn't over 15, down near the Fords. Fords at the farm.
Uh-huh. Were they stony, the pastures?
No, they were full of brush and stones. Lots of good grass for the cattle. And a spring in there, a place for the cattle to drink. It's still there, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice, it didn't blow away.
How many acres of tillable land?
Well, let me see. 25 acres in one pasture and 15 in another. It was 2 pastures.
Of tillable land?
No, that was
pastures.
That
was pastures, yeah.
That would be 40 acres of pasture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's 110 acres of tillable land. We'll call it 100, I guess. That would be enough. Well, I don't know how long we stayed on the old McGowan farm, and she sold the farm to Henry Coffin.
What did you grow on the tillable land?
Oh, potatoes, grain, oats, and barley, and corn, and potatoes. Good big garden.
How about hay?
Oh, yes, lots of hay.
How many acres of potatoes would you?
Well, there was 14 acres of potatoes when my father died, but she didn't plant so many, 4.
Who did?
My mother.
After he died?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How much of barley?
Well, we had 3 acres of wheat. Well, there was barley and oats together. They were all in the same field, oats and barley.
They're sowed together and grew up together?
Yeah, that would be... That would be probably 19 acres, something like that.
Of oats and barley together?
And 5 acres of corn.
Uh-huh. Now, what did you do with the oats and barley when they were harvested?
The man moved in with a thrashing machine into the barn, and he would thrash the oats and barley, and the neighbors would come to help. And we would put the bags of oats and barley in a granary. It was built up from the ground so the rats and mice couldn't dig, make a hole in the floor and lose all the oats and barley. Then we'd take that oats and barley and bag some of it up and go to Whippleville and get it ground for the cattle and the pigs.
For the cattle and the pigs? They ground this in Malone?
In Whippleville.
Whippleville. Where?
Fred Lyman's grist.
Uh-huh. Where's that located? Near the bridge or near the Johnson Post?
Oh, down near the bridge.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah,
was it run by water?
Water fell. Fred Lyman, a man with pure white hair, he was, what do you call him, the miller?
Yeah.
He was the miller, and Charlie and a man by the name of Strader helped him. Strader. Elroy Manili's wife's father was the miller, too. I remember them like yesterday. And I drove down there with a team of black horses. They were full sisters. Down to Whippleville and stay. Well, we had to take our turn, you see, to get our grain ground because there's lots of other farmers ahead of me and get back about chore time. And the hired man would be there, he would start the chores. That's the way it went right along there.
How often would you go with the barley? The barley notes, just once a year?
Oh, no, we'd. Have to go quite often. We take down 10 bags of barley and oats and we come back with 15 after it was ground. It would be fluffy.
Uh-huh.
I remember how long we stayed on the McGowan farm and Henry Coughlin bought it, and my mother bought her own father's farm in Bangor. And I moved the furniture and everything from that farm up there that was supposed to go to the other farm.
Uh-huh.
With those black horses on sleds in the winter. And there was 21 cows down there, and hens and pigs, horses.
How many bags of oats and barley would you have altogether after you finish taking them
thrashing,
to the millers?
After you finish thrashing?
After you finish taking them to the millers.
Oh my. We'd have lots left in the granary. We'd thrash 500 bushels.
Of oats and barley?
Yeah.
And take them all down to Whippleville?
Well, we would have just at time.
Just at time. Just when you needed them. So you'd be going all during the winter?
Yeah.
I see. And you'd have some left over in the spring?
Sometimes we'd have to go to the grist mill and buy some more.
Uh-huh. How much did they charge you at the grist mill?
Oh, I can't remember, by the bushel or by the 100 pounds. Of course, we fed the horses out of that granary all winter because they were drawing logs and wood. See, we had a separate horse barn for the horses and we had a cow barn. Cows. Hip roof red barn, it's still there yet, would be full of hay for the horses.
How many tons of hay?
Well, we cut a lot. 60 tons of them.
What was it cut with?
An Osborne mowing machine and rake for the horse rake.
How many people working to cut the hay?
Well, I used to take the team and mow the hay with the Osborne mowing machine, and while the hired man was cultivating potatoes with the other chestnut mare we had, I'd be mowing hay and he'd be cultivating. Then he'd spade plow the potatoes, that would be hill them up, and that would be about the last. Didn't hoe them by hand. Kill the weeds with a spade plow.
What's a spade plow?
Well, that's to go between the rows and push the dirt up towards the potatoes.
That was while they were still growing?
Yeah.
Was the hay put into bales?
No bales then, Dave.
Just left in windrows.
And we tumble it up and pitch it on the wagon, but we had a hay fork to take it off. The team would draw the hay up into the barn. And I drove the team to take the hay up through the big pitching hole up into the barn, and the hired man would stick the fork, hay fork, big one.
Did you stand on the hay wagon to pitch hay into the barn?
Well, you would, but you couldn't reach.
Oh.
That had to go with the hole.
They had a fork hanging up in the hay,
well,
hay loft.
And a track.
Uh-huh. How many ton of hay on one hay wagon?
Well, I guess you'd do pretty well if you put on a ton of loose hay. And we'd draw in, it all depended how hot it was, if we could stand the heat. Probably draw in 6-7 loads of hay a day after it got dry. We wouldn't rake it until the dew was off it. We'd have to get really good and dry. It might rain before we got that field of hay in. We wouldn't cut down too much at the time because we watched the clouds. Mm-hmm. Never had any black hay that laid there. We wouldn't cut down 10, 11 acres. We'd just cut down 4 or 5 and then wait till it dried and draw it in. Sometimes we had to use the hay tedder to dry it because the dew was too heavy.
What's a hay tedder?
One of them things that teeth go up and down to shake the hay, drawn by horses.
Oh.
That was a hay tenor.
What did your father do with all this machinery when it wasn't being used?
Well, we had a tool shed.
Uh-huh. How'd you take care of it? Was there any special procedure? When you were just finished with it, put it away for the next year?
Oh, just back it under the shed.
Uh-huh. And was it clean?
Well, the drill was clean. The grain drill had done the sowing in the spring. We had to take the phosphate oil out of that, or it would rust the gears. Done that last time. His name was James Dory. We called him Cy.
Why'd you call him Cy?
Oh, just a habit. We never called him James, we always called him Cy. His folks lived up in Belmont, old Pat Doherty.
What were his parents like? What was his father like?
His father was a full-blood Irish, was a brogue, and his mother was a French woman.
Uh-huh.
She was a gardener.
Oh, were you ever in their house?
Oh, yes, just like wax. Plain. No rugs or nothing, but she must have scrubbed that hardwood floor every day. It turned white. Now, old Pat drove a white, fat horse with a yellow-geared buggy. Pat Doherty.
What did he do?
Well, I suppose when he was a younger man, he probably worked out or he had some trade. He was a large man, an easy-going sort of man. With a red face. Pat Doherty. A little crooked stem pipe in his mouth, as I remember. Cy had a brother, Johnny, and a brother, Kate.
How do you spell that?
Kate Doherty.
A brother?
Kate. A sister.
A sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She married Watson McKinney here in Malone. An awful pretty woman, girl. And he had a brother, Joe. Yeah, Joe and Johnny and Kate. And Charlie was the fire chief over here. Charlie Doherty was James's brother. Okay. That family.
What was the outside of their house like?
Their house was wood-colored like Henry and Jedward or something.
Mm-hmm.
No paint.
How often did you paint the McGowan place?
Well, we didn't stay there long enough to do any painting. Henry Coffin, I expect, when he moved in, I expect they took some partitions down and made bedrooms in a different place in the house because they had 4 young daughters. remember only one of Henry Coffin's daughter's name. Her name was, she was a bookkeeper at the GLF with Mrs. Johnson. Married years ago. Well, in Bangor, I guess we're all through with the McGowan place, Henry. Oh, everything. Nancy?
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, you know, it's my father's stepmother. See, my father's own mother died when Elizabeth was born. That would be my father's sister.
Okay, tell about what Nancy did around the house.
You go to hold it?
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, well, she'd done her housework. She worked outside. She had a lot of ducks and geese and turkeys. And she was a great, she married my grandfather, Andrew McGowan. Her name was Otis. She came from Belmont. Of course, my father never knew of any other mother, only just her. She was a stout lady. Quite the apron on all the time.
Was her dress always clean?
Yeah. And she would feed the calves and help my grandfather feed the calves, and they had a lot of calves born in the spring, and they would be sold in the fall. They'd keep two or three of them to grow them up for cows. And the neighbor women always would call on Nancy to go and babysit when they wanted to go away. It would be Rusty Benealy's people. They had a lot of them light-haired girls. Annabelle's one of them. Those two boys, Elroy and Orne. And my grandmother would go over there. And when around the neighborhood there, for quite a few miles around, if there was going to be a new child come to into the world, why, she would have, they always come and got her. The child would be born before the doctor got there, lots of times.
She was a midwife.
Yeah.
Did she keep any records?
Yeah, she had a diary.
She did.
I don't know where it ever went. Well, she used to shave my grandfather, if you want that down, and
everything.
Tie his tie, and candle 12 dozen of eggs to take them home. And the grandfather would go to the barn and assist the hired man about getting the horse to the door. And then he was very high strung, and he'd get out of patience because she wasn't ready. But she was a stout, easygoing woman, and she paid no attention to him. He was very high strung.
Was he crippled? That he couldn't
He was lame.
Oh.
He had a hitch like that man on TV.
Grandpa McCoy.
Yeah, he had a hitch like that. He was a great man to cut wood with the axe, and he cut his knee open.
So what would he say to her after she got him ready?
Oh. I'd be on the porch there, standing in the horse barn door, and he'd say, "I do declare, woman, it's like fitting out a ship for Ireland to get you started for Malone." And there she'd done anything, everything. She had even fed the hens and the turkeys. And he'd take care of the pigs.
Was this a Sunday morning?
No, this would be on Saturday, when they go to town to do their shopping.
What did your mother do in the house?
Oh, get meals ready for Ralph and I and Lyle. She See, I had to quit school when my father died. Mm-hmm. But the other boys went to school. Malone, Bangor. I went to the foot schoolhouse up here, and so did they. Lyle never did, I don't think.
He was too young.
I think he went to, when we moved to Bangor, he went to the high school in Bangor Village.
How did your grandma Nancy and your mother divide the work at home?
Well, you see, there was a hallway. Nancy and Andy lived on one side, and we lived on the other.
Uh-huh.
Each woman done their own work. Of course, when my mother didn't feel well, Nancy would go in and do her work.
And the cooking was done for both families in one kitchen?
No, they each had a kitchen.
They each did?
They did. Oh, yeah.
Which kitchen was kept the best?
Well, I don't know. If my mother went to town with a horse and buggy or a cutter by herself, and Nancy might go in and see if my mother left any dishes she'd washed. Of course, you heat the water on the stove. Had to go out to the well to get the water.
Where was the well?
Right out front, with a pump in it.
Did you have a summer kitchen?
No.
No. Had one of those in Bangor.
Back porch with a stove out there.
Mm.
So they wouldn't have to start the stove in the kitchen, it got too hot. Well, they walked a good many miles lugging food from the back porch to the kitchen.
In Bangor?
Yeah.
What time in the morning did you have to get up when your father was alive?
Well, 4:30.
The boys? The three of you even?
Well, we had to get up to help.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Sometimes a hard man wouldn't help to milk. He would take care of his horses and go to the field with them. Either the plow or harrow or mow hay.
What was the first thing your father did after he was dressed?
That's kind of hard to tell. The morning he died, he was going down in the pasture after the cattle.
What was the first chore done in the morning?
Feed the horses and go after the cows. Always fed the horses first.
Where were the cows were kept in the barn in the winter?
Oh, yeah. Put them in right after the fair. We turned them in the barnyard during the day in the wintertime when the sun was shining.
What season of the year do they give milk?
All summer and part to winter. Each cow is supposed to rest 3 months, 2.5. He got down the stairs at the last step. He got dead.
How many quarts of milk is a cow supposed to give?
It all depends how she's fed and.
Your cow. What was the average?
Some of them had to milk twice a day in a 10-quart pail.
20 quarts a day.
Yeah, and some of them didn't give a pailful.
What was the reason for those that didn't give too much? Well,
they would put more meat on their ribs and not so much milk in the pail. All getting the same feed. Lots of grain and corn and hay.
How much did you feed each cow? Or did you have different schedules for different cows?
Well, down in Bangor when we was feeding them.
Talk about the foot road up here.
Oh. Well, fed them grain all winter, 4 quarts to a feed. Well, that would be once a day when they were dry.
About what time a day?
Oh, breakfast time in the morning.
This is when they were dry.
Well, it didn't make any difference whether dry or not. They got the grain just the same.
4 quarts a day. What else? A
whole lot of corn and hay.
At any special time of day, or was it always there in front of them?
No, you don't want any food left in front of a cow. She'll breathe on it and she won't eat it.
time were they milked? Night?
They would try to milk them the same time every night.
About what time?
About 4:45.
How long would it take to milk? How many cows did you have?
40, but there wasn't all milking all the year round.
About how many would be milking at one time?
Well, in the winter there was probably 15. The rest would dry. The rest would give birth to calves in March, and then they'd be fresh.
Would they be in the barn or in the field when they gave birth to calves?
Oh, in the barn, in a box stall.
All about the same time they would have their calves?
No, no. No, they'd string along till April and May.
How many bulls did you have, 40 cows?
That's why we'd get out of patience. They would be born too many bulls, and we'd have to feed them and fat them up and take them to the butcher.
How many bulls did you have to breed the cows?
Oh, one.
One bull?
Maybe two. We had the older bull would get ugly. We'd have to stall feed him and fat him up more than he was. Not let him run in the fields because he'd run the fat off himself. Then we'd have Mr. Murphy, the man that bought the sheep, and he was a meat market man, come and buy him and butcher him right there in the barn floor where the hay was.
You saw a lot of these slaughterings?
Yeah.
What would he do, Mr. Murphy?
Well, the hired man could take the bull out of the barn and with a ring in his nose and a staff.
Pass to the ring.
Yeah, and take him into the barn floor where it was nice and clean.
It was cement?
No, it was wood.
Oh, wood floor.
Wood floor in the barn floor where the hay and corn was.
Did they take special pains to sweep that floor off?
Oh, yeah.
They did. Yeah.
And everybody kept quiet. The women folks, they never come out. They didn't like to see that done. And they'd draw his head down and there was a chain there, and they'd hook the chain in the ring and draw his head down so he'd be looking like that. And Mr. Murphy would shoot him behind the ear, and then James would hit him in the head with the axe. And he'd stiffen out on the floor, and then they'd cut his throat. Let him bleed good, and then they'd skin him and hang him up.
They'd take out the intestines?
Oh, I should say. We draw the two stomachs and all the intestines on a stone boat wagon with a stone boat drawn by a horse way down in the back lot for the foxes. Take all that. They had a big paunch, you know, big as that chair over there.
A lot of people eat the intestines.
Oh, my.
Your grandmother and mother never made blood pudding.
Oh, no.
No.
That comes from pigs.
Oh.
Blood pudding.
Did your mother or grandmother ever do anything, make any food out of the inside, the intestines, or any animal?
Well, a pig, they would skin the intestines and get the tallow.
Oh, they use the tallow?
Well, that would be to cook donuts in.
Oh.
Fry donuts in.
Oh. But they never made blood pudding?
No, that, people of other nationalities would always catch the blood and make blood pudding.
Did they make sausage, their own sausage?
Yeah, they did. My mother, Nancy and my mother, had cheese.
They made head cheese.
Put in the keg down cellar and put the cover on and lay some stones on it.
When was the pig slaughtered? In the fall?
It all depends when the market was the best.
Was it slaughtered for market?
Yeah, so the price was right.
How many pigs did you slaughter every year?
Oh, my. 6 or 7. You always keep one, you know.
For yourself? One of the slaughtered pigs?
Yeah.
Were they male or female that you slaughtered?
Both. Didn't make any difference.
In any particular reason you'd slaughter one pig and keep another? Because the one you kept was young or breeding or something like that?
Well, the old mother pigs, we always had two mother pigs that would give birth to 11 or 12 or 14 little ones, and we'd sell them little pigs when they're old enough to the neighbors.
How much for a pig?
Well, they were $6 a pair, $3 a piece. Now they're $12 a piece for a young pig. 5 weeks old, 6 weeks old.
What would the mother pigs sometimes eat the younger ones?
Yeah, James and I had to stop it.
Your grandfather had a special way of stopping that.
Oh, well, that was my grandfather, and James was there too.
Yeah, tell him.
Sorry. Well, he had a piece of a shingle that he had laying on the beam there. The first pig she had, she turned around and ate it. My grandfather had a horsewhip there. He hit her a crack, made her mad. But James had a pint of whiskey up there in that brace. And she was laying down, you see. She lay right down because she knew she was going to give birth to a lot more of them. And he'd stick the butt of the horsewhip in her mouth, and James would put that shingle in there to hold her mouth open, and they'd pour a pint of whiskey down her. And that would put her to sleep, and she'd have the 11 or 12 other little pigs, and she'd own them. She was disowning them when she was eating. She was sick and disagreeable. They get sick like a human being when they're giving birth to their little ones. But the whiskey put her to sleep, and my grandfather always kept that in the brace of the barn. Pour it down. You see, you wouldn't dare. Well, he did get his thumb bit taken off by the pig.
You mean his thumbnail?
No, his whole thumb.
Which hand?
The right one.
Wow.
That's when they were killing them, and he was sticking them with a butcher knife, sharp on both sides, and he didn't keep track of his thumb, and when he stuck the pig to bleed him, to kill him, his thumb went in her mouth, and the pig bit it off.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
How would they slaughter a pig?
Chase him around the pen, and chase them out of the pen, out into the hallway, in front of the pigs, till they got them winded, and then they grab them by the front leg and plop them on their back, and he'd run the knife into them, in their throat.
Across?
No, straight down in.
Oh, right down into the throat.
I see him do it lots.
And then they would, how would they treat the pig after that? Would they
they'd just wait till the pig died. It was a
quiver.
Quiver, and all of a sudden that quiver was over and the pig was dead.
What'd they do then?
Well, they had a kettle of scalding hot water, a black kettle, a lot bigger than that chair, with a fire under it, of cedar wood and birch. And then they had a gangway, that's when they'd scald the pig. If the water was too hot, it would burn the meat. It had to be just right, because I see my grandfather put his hand in.
What was the gangway? A piece of board they slid the carcass down?
Yeah, five or six planks nailed together. Mm-hmm. And then they had a hook to stick in their ear.
In the mouth.
And they'd run that pig into that barrel of hot water, and you see the rustles come off. Then when they go five or six times down into that barrel, that big, two men, you see, standing on the plank, and let the pig go down into the barrel, keep doing that. And then when they had been enough times in the hot water, where they bring the pig out on the platform and take the scrapers, off come the bristles. And they scrape them with a sharp knife, just like a razor. Yep.
Did they take the insides out before or after they dipped them in the hot water?
Oh, after.
After
they got the Brussels all off.
Oh, yeah.
Then they hang them up and split them.
What part of the pig did the family use? Did your family use?
Fresh pork. And then they would smoke the hams. I don't know where they went to smoke the hams. And then they had pork that they put in a barrel and they sold it. Brian.
Was this your Grandma Nancy's job or your mother's? Do all this with the meat, preserving the meat?
No, it was Andy and Andy and Nancy and Jane.
Uh-huh.
And my mother didn't pay much attention. No, she was too weak. She hadn't been saved.
What was your usual supper?
What time, you mean?
What was it? What'd you have to
eat? Oh, we had potatoes three times a day.
Fried or boiled?
Boiled.
In the morning, boiled?
Once in a while, fried. But we had beef buried in the oats. You know, oats are cold. You run your arm in them clear to your shoulder.
Yeah.
And the oats are cold, and that would freeze that beef just like a stone. That's what we had for meat. And eggs and sausage.
How about salt pork?
Once in a while, not too often.
How about chicken? How often do you have chicken?
Well, it all depends on when the old hens would set and they'd come off with off their nest with 13, 14 little chickens. They might be all roosters, they might be all pullets. Well, if half of them was roosters, why then, quite